Now you can subscribe to Bob Enyart's monthly Bible study DVDs. These verse-by-verse Bible study videos are great for family Bible study or even starting your own neighborhood Bible study. Each month, you get 4 or 5 Bible study sessions on 2 DVDs. You can subscribe by calling 1-800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart. Welcome to Real Science Radio.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
So much science news to do, Fred, including from the mainstream science outlets.
That's right. And we got a great article from Science News about genetic diversity. So, Bob, if I was to make a prediction of what the genetic diversity would be, and it was based on a creation worldview, what would you expect if we were to be able to measure the quirks that show up genetically
in the whole human race, the genomes?
How rapidly, because now they have a pretty good idea of how rapid this diversity happened.
Yeah, and this comes from the journal Nature. Here's what I would guess. I would guess that the data will show that the vast majority of the human diversity in our genes has happened in the last few thousand years, as compared to the evolutionist who would say it's happened over the last 100,000 or 2 million years.
Yeah, the length of how long they think that humans have been around.
And it turns out that looking at people's DNA, and Fred, this is not about kangaroos or sponges. Those are interesting studies. Mm-hmm. This is about people.
It's about humans. What are people?
What is Krauss? Remember Lawrence Krauss, physicist? What is Darwin? What is evolution? What are people?
Define people.
they act like they've never heard any of these terms. Yeah. But this is a look at people's DNA. And what they found out is that most of the genetic quirks that people carry today have occurred within the last 5,000 years. And this is according to a paper published in the journal Nature in November 2012. This is hot off the presses.
Well, isn't that an interesting number? 5,000 years. Is that
roughly
kind of fits in the time frame of the global flood when there would have been a true bottleneck
in
the human population?
Plus, only about 6,000 years ago, you had God creating Adam and Eve. And so they had the initial genetic complement of the human race. And then lo and behold, since there was the bottleneck of the global flood on Noah's Ark, where there were only 8 people, as Jesus says, the Bible says. But then, since then, we've had the diversity come into the human genome, and that's why they're finding that it happened recently.
Yeah, and this isn't a trivial study, Bob. I mean, they examined more than 15,000 genes.
That's most of our genes, right? Because we have about 20,500 genes by the latest count.
That's right. And they checked it out in about 10 people. Or no, it says 6,500 people.
That's a lot of people, right?
That's a lot of people.
Imagine just getting the genetic data from 6,500 people from around the world. That's significant.
Yeah, with the studies we've had on genetics and the mapping we've got, I mean, they can use computers. And again, we've got 15,000 genes on 6,500 people of both European American and African American ancestry. And they look for all these genetic variants. Mm-hmm. And previously, they had found, you know, quite a plethora of these variants, but it was from a much smaller sample. Now they've got, you know, these huge samples, and they actually can date when these variants arose.
You can see how they would do that. It's sort of like following a manuscript chain, like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Exactly.
And you look at handwritten copies of manuscripts, including of the New Testament, and then you see at a certain point, a new spelling was introduced. You see, wow, some scribe added this new spelling, and then you see later copies of that same spelling, and you realize, well, that was introduced, you know, sort of recently, and some people copied that.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same concept when you look at DNA, and so they're saying that the vast majority, like of European Americans, more than 80% of the genetic variation occurred just in the last 5,000 years.
And this is over 700,000 genetic variants. And they were able to pile those into 81% of those happening in the last 5,000 years. That does not fit their paradigm.
No, it doesn't.
It fits ours.
And so, of course, they spin it, right? The co-author of the study, Joshua Akey, with the Akey Breaky Heart Institute. He's a geneticist at the University of Washington in Seattle. And so they do spin it. They say, you know, we know that humans migrated out of Africa about 70,000 years ago. It's like, hey, Akey Breaky, you don't know that. You're guessing, and you're guessing incorrectly. And your own study is providing confirmation of the biblical account of the recent creation of man and the genetic bottleneck through the global flood.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the mitochondrial Eve argument, right?
Yes.
In the study that they had.
Right.
Wasn't that awesome? Ann Gibbons.
Ann Gibbons.
In Science Magazine had documented this and reported on it. And mitochondrial Eve was found to be, after they got a pile of data in, a mere 6,000 years old.
And that was in the journal Science.
That's right.
So we're looking at Science News, which is an evolutionary science, you know, mainstream news outlet, which is their report on the paper in the journal Nature. And they say most of the genetic variants the researchers uncovered are predicted to change the workings of proteins in harmful ways. And we've been saying this, of course, creationists have said this from the beginning of creationists, that genetic mutations are harmful. On balance, they're harmful.
And, you know,
some are neutral.
Some are neutral. But, you know, these are most of the time the random mistakes in the DNA. The word mistake, that applies, right, Bob?
It's
a mistake in the
it's
DNA.
A mutant.
So how is it going to actually
I want
lead
my
to...
kids to be mutants.
Yeah.
So they'll be better. They'll evolve.
And so where this really becomes such a philosophy and a fantasy is this guy, I just can't believe it. He says, you know, he admits that these genetic variants that they're uncovering, they're expected to affect proteins in a harmful way. And yet he says some of the genetic tweaks might someday give humans an evolutionary advantage.
Yeah, right.
That's just dreaming.
That would be like Las Vegas casino managers saying, can we have random access to your checking account? And usually we'll take money out of it, but rarely we'll put money in it.
Yeah.
And over the course of your life, things should pay off for you.
That's right.
It's like, no, we'll skip that deal.
Yeah. Unless you apply intelligence and can count cards,
right,
you're going to lose it. Blackjack at 21.
Right.
You know, the casino owners know that.
Yes.
So over time, it's a fantasy for them to say, oh, over time, you'll win. No, that's not true. It's a downward slope.
Fred, just this past week, I had one of our critics email me and say, you guys use all sources that are out of date.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I saw that. Well, you saw that, right?
Yeah.
Well, like, what are you talking about? But anyway, we were just in Nature, the journal Nature from November 2012. So now I'm going to go out on a limb and use something really old. This is from the journal Nature, July 2012.
Okay,
so I'm going way back in history.
Yeah, that's pretty old, Bob, and you don't provide sources.
No, right. And so this has to do with radiometric dating. And this is such a fun story. This is coming out of Creation Magazine, the current edition, which is just so great at creation.com. And Fred, you know the article I'm talking about radiometric dating is tricky and disputed. What's fun about this is the journal Nature is admitting exactly what we creationists have been saying since Henry Morris.
Yeah, I mean, their subheading is perfect. It's true. It says dating features on the moon and Mars is guesswork. What a candid admission.
It's guesswork. So here's Nature in this article on planetary science. They say that when you do radiometric dating, now that's taking radioactive elements that decay, let's say it's potassium argon.
Or plutonium degrading into lead, right, over time.
Sure. Thorium, strontium, thorium.
Yeah, all those. There's different processes where one element essentially changes into another because it's spitting off. It's radioactive. It's spitting off electrons and decaying back into a stable form.
It's releasing alpha particles, beta particles. And so, Fred, here's what they're saying in Nature. They're admitting that radiometric dates are, quote, some of the trickiest, most delicate, and most disputed measurements on Earth.
That's right.
Unquote.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah.
Because you date rocks of known ages from volcanoes in modern times, and you get dates that say those rocks hardened millions of years ago, so you know it's wrong. You date the same flow of the same material, and you get wildly discordant dates, like tens of millions of years apart or more.
The gist of that is when we date rocks where we know the age, we don't get good dates, yet we're expected to trust the dates of the rocks where we don't know the age.
Right.
And that they do that all the time in the textbooks.
Yeah.
It's their propaganda.
So I love Nature's subhead that you already quoted, but it's so blunt. It says, dating features on the moon and Mars is guesswork.
Guesswork.
Fred, they're admitting this, which they do when they're pressed. When you debate somebody like Aaron Ra or Lawrence Krauss or whoever, whatever atheist or evolutionist, they pretend to the public that anyone who questions this is uneducated.
Yeah, being unscientific and is against science.
Right.
You know, the Earth is 4.6 billion years old.
Oh, 4.55.
Is it 4.55?
They bring it to the second digit after the decimal point.
Oh, that's
to
right.
Show
I'd have been
how
shot and
accurate they
and
are.
Feathered for that.
Right. It's just a facade.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely
an illusion of accuracy and credibility. It's neat to see that when they make their statements, they're overselling. It's marketing hype from like a cultist high priest. That's how I view Lawrence Krauss, theoretical physicist. Emphasis on the theoretical. Mm-hmm. Marketing hype as though he were a high priest of a cult, not an objective scientist.
Okay, Bob. So speaking of things that are supposedly millions and millions of years old,
yes.
How about the leech? The leech cocoon.
This is
What's
fun.
A leech cocoon?
Now, this here comes from PNAS.
Okay.
I like PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the most prestigious scientific body in the world, probably. And they're all, almost all, evolutionists.
That's right.
And so this leech, ooh, those are those gross things that get on your skin when you go in a swamp. It turns out that they take a rock that they believe is 200 million years old.
The leeches take that rock?
No. No, the evolutionists take this rock. They break it open, and they find in it these cocoons. A leech goes through a life cycle where at one point it has a cocoon. And the cocoon, they say, does as good a job as amber does in preserving soft tissue from, you know, creatures that were fossilized then.
Yeah, because they found some fossilized creatures in here, right?
Yeah, really. I think they even got organic matter. At least that's what they're claiming. And this comes from the University of Kansas, a paleobiologist. And I love that, Fred. More and more you hear about paleobiologists because when you have blood vessels and hemoglobin and now DNA from a T-Rex, you need biologists who study things that are in the fossil record. They call them not paleontologists, but paleobiologists.
So, Bob, what they found in this leech cocoon is a single-celled animal, a protozoan. Amazingly, it was identical to modern single-celled bell animals that live today in our ponds and streams.
So this is fun, right? This single-celled animal, plus it had cilia on it. So you have a single cell, which is so tiny. These are microscopic creatures. And then they have cilia, and even the cilia are intact. And it shows stasis. The evolutionists say, well, why didn't it evolve in 200 million years? Why would it stay the same? And the two features of the fossil record are sudden appearance of complex variety of life forms and stasis.
So it doesn't change. Once it shows up, it doesn't change.
It doesn't change. Like, remember we did the show in December last year and we talked about insects and the evolutionists right up the street at the University of Colorado, CU in Boulder. They said, well, we're sure that they wouldn't have eardrums.
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Back then, they wouldn't have evolved sophisticated hearing with eardrums. And they looked at insects and they said, well, golly, look at that. Surprise, surprise. They had eardrums, same kind of insects that have them today.
They went and more closely examined some of these fossils they'd had of insects. And sure enough, they had these eardrums that they said that they wouldn't have had back then because they were evolving. The animals are the same. If anything, they've gotten, a lot of times they get smaller, right? I mean, huge crocodiles in the fossil record.
Yeah, there was giantism long ago, but we do not see creatures evolving limbs, evolving vital organs. And so we made our Real Science Radio prediction that when you find species today that have whatever they happen to have, whatever kind of mobility, hearing, sight, taste, touch, echolocation. When you find that species in the fossil record, it's going to have that. You're not going to have creatures without a trunk evolving a trunk.
That's right. Yeah, like they'll find a bat in the fossil record that's 80 million years old, and it looks remarkably like a modern-day bat.
Remarkably.
Well, there's a reason.
Right, because it is a modern-day bat. It was there at the time of Noah.
That's right.
So this is fun, and what I love about this, Fred, is it's coming out of a secular evolutionist source, and they do say that these scientists, they dissolved the rock with acid, and it left only the organic material, mostly leaves, leaf litter, but also 20 cocoons from leeches, and one contained this perfectly preserved protozoan. That's fun.
So, Bob, there's another story in Creation Magazine that I thought was pretty interesting. It's a little bit off the path of creation evolution.
Yeah.
It's the story of same-sex couples that have kids.
Oh, yeah. This is a sad thing.
Yeah,
right?
It really is, actually. It's
Homosexuality is so destructive.
It is.
And here we have this study, not by a typical Christian fundamentalist who we tend to do studies and show that homosexuality is destructive, but this comes from the University of Texas at Austin. It's published in a peer-reviewed social science research journal, and it contradicts the political correctness that says homosexual parents are just the same as, or even, you know, Fred, they're better, of course.
Yeah.
Or even better than traditional mother, father, married parents. That has been dealt a blow by this researcher, Mark Regnerus, who studied 3,000 American adults.
So 3,000.
This is a big study.
It's not a simple study.
No, ages 18 to 39. It's pretty neat what he found out.
So the results showed that those raised under same-sex parents had poor mental and physical health. They had lower income levels and more troubled personal relationships than those raised by, you know, regular intact families.
Right, exactly. And so let me quote this guy, Mark Regnerus. He said that this data overturns conventional wisdom. You know, conventional, I guess that means last 20 years.
Yeah.
But nowadays,
because
right?
It's not wisdom.
Because
it never was.
So much biblical common sense is discarded. So now you call it conventional wisdom.
Yeah, and they call it
homos are equally healthy, which of course they're not. But so he says this data overturns conventional wisdom, the empirical claim that there are no notable differences must go. The study is called New Family Structures Study, and it clearly reveals, he says, that children appear most apt to succeed as adults when they spend their entire childhood with their married mother and father, and especially when the parents remain married to the present day. And of course, that's
exactly what we'd expect to find from our worldview. But, you know, they claim this conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
I think if you talk to people who are either carnal Christians or secular and maybe not believe the Bible, I mean, common sense tells you that this is going to be the case.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if it's conventional wisdom.
No, it shouldn't be called that.
It reinforces what we know to be true.
Right. Doug McBurney, he co-hosts Bob and Yurt Live often with me. And toward the very end of December 2012, Doug and I talked about a list of the 10 things that kids wanted for Christmas, the 10 most popular things in England. And these kids, you know, they just didn't pay any attention to the social engineers, Fred.
Yeah.
Because on the list of the top 10 things they want, you know, what does a kid want? A BB gun? I don't know. Over in England, that's probably against the law. But one of the top 10 things was a dad.
A dad. That's sad. And these are kids that aren't going to preach the political line.
For Christmas, I'd like a dad. A lot of them said, I'd like a brother or a sister. Mm-hmm. You know, political correctness, you only have one kid. Cheryl and I have 7 boys. We're blessed from God. Kids are assets. They're not liabilities.
That's right. How often they're treated as such. Oh, this is going to be such a burden
on
us.
Yeah, like you're in a checkout counter at the grocery store, and some lady looks at Cheryl with all the kids. And she says, boy, I'm glad that's not me. And Cheryl says, so are the kids. You know, They're glad it's not you too. So we love our kids. Our kids love us. And it's a lie that kids are a liability, that kids are bad. Liberals, atheists, evolutionists, pro-aborts, they say, you know, there are too many blacks in Africa. We got to get abortion. There are too many Chinese people. We got to promote abortion. And there are too many. And it's not in all, but in many, it's a hidden form of racism.
Oh, it is. And, you know, in Japan, they're advertising on billboards for people to have kids.
Right.
Because they're having a population shrinkage problem, right?
Yeah. That's
a replacement problem. And that actually hurts your economy.
Yeah. So this study is just the latest. The Family Research Institute out of Colorado Springs, I've often interviewed Dr. Paul Cameron, who runs that. And for decades, the evidence that homosexuality is destructive is just overwhelming. It's so clear. And at our website, realscienceradio.com/homosexuals, we've got a lot of the information there in a debate that I did with a leading homosexual activist, Wayne Besson from Truth Wins Out. A lot of information to protect our families and our kids.
Yeah. Bob, if you had a loved one or a friend or anybody you knew that was doing heroin, would you warn them about heroin? Because, you know, because you love them, right?
They're, you sure say would.
Their family,
right?
You'd warn them about their heroin use and what the harms are and what bad it would do. Or would you tolerate them and love them? And that's the problem here is they think that they're showing love to the homosexuals when actually they're not.
They're lying
loving
to them
right over the cliff.
Right.
They've got their arms around them right as they walk them over to the cliff and say, yeah, go ahead and jump.
Fred, the first science shows we ever did on the air date way back to 1991. And I remember the height of the homosexual revolution. And I would say on the air something that today is stated by the Centers for Disease Control, but I was hated for saying it back then. And it was that HIV primarily affects homosexuals, primarily. Mm-hmm. The general population is not at risk generally of contracting AIDS. It's targeting the homosexual community. I was hated, even though you fast forward 20 some years later, and now you find out the same from the CDC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and I spell that S-E-E-D-Y, the CDC. You know the Holy See? Well, they're the CDC.
Well, okay.
Anyway, Fred, they have shown that HIV and AIDS is not a major disease concern for the general population. It is for male homosexuals, not lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
Male homosexuals and people doing IV drugs and prostitutes in the homosexual community, those are the people primarily at risk. So imagine lying to smokers and saying that lung cancer is not a smoker's disease. There's no greater risk to getting lung cancer if you smoke cigarettes. You're just lying to them.
Oh, yeah, good
and
analogy.
That's what they said to the homosexuals. While we were pleading with the public and our audience to realize that AIDS is a homosexual disease, we were hated for it, trying to warn people, don't die unnecessarily. You will be killed unnecessarily by this disease if you partake in that dangerous lifestyle.
That's right. Bob, how about dinosaurs on a major weight loss diet?
Oh, yeah.
This is a huge diet. Bob, if I could lose 4 times my weight, that probably wouldn't be so good. But
yeah, you'd be pretty skinny.
Yeah.
Now, me, maybe. Well, not 4 times.
Well, anyways, so it sounds like the scientists have re-examined their numbers on the weights of dinosaurs.
Yeah, and this sort of goes along with a study we did a year ago, Fred. They evaluated 1,000 different dinosaur species, and poof, 500 of them disappeared.
Poof.
Because they realized they were double counting the same species. Mm-hmm. You know, you have juveniles, you have adults of slightly different shapes, like we have dogs. You look at dog skeletons, and boy, you think they were 30 different species, and it's just
one
species.
You put a head on the wrong body, and you get a brontosaurus.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's what they did. So they went from 1,000 species to 500. Now they have done a very sophisticated analysis of how much the dinosaurs weighed. And this is interesting. They've cut their weight dramatically. What they did was they took existing living modern animals like reindeer, elephants, polar bears, and giraffes. And they took their carcasses and they weighed their skeletons, their bone, and their skin. So that's interesting, right? You got to get a butcher,
yeah,
or somebody to cut the skin off. They weigh the bones and the skin, and they found out that that combination was 21%, almost exactly equal between each of those four species.
When compared to their actual measured weight, right? All of these animals, their bones, let's get this right now. So the bones and skin on each of these animals,
yeah,
when you weighed them, was 21%, almost exactly to the weight of the animal,
right,
which is interesting.
So let's say the animal weighed 1,000 pounds. Their bones and skin in a heap would weigh 210 pounds.
Yeah.
So then they had a formula for calculating the weight of the animal.
So I don't understand that, because like when giraffes, they all have different lifestyles. You got some giraffes that are, you know, sitting there playing Nintendo games, and others are hard workers and eating the leaves, and, you know, so they've got all this variety of lifestyle. Right. How could they all have that same weight? Because I have a feeling this doesn't work for humans, does it?
No, probably not. What they found out then, when they applied that same formula to dinosaur skeletons, they used high-speed computers, they used 3D images, laser scanning, they recreated then the dinosaur and its skin. And then they took that estimate of what that would weigh. And they said, for example, this Brachiosaurus that they previously said would weigh up to 80 tons. They said, you know what? We think now it was only 23 tons.
That's a huge drop.
Yeah. And
that's a major Atkins diet.
Yeah, that's right. And it gets to the whole Noah's Ark thing and how much could Noah's Ark have held? Well, Noah's Ark was almost two football fields in length, and it was three stories high, and it had the equivalent of, hundreds of railroad boxcars, and it could fit all the creatures it needed to easily with tons of room to spare.
Tons of room to spare.
Right.
To populate the entire Earth rapidly after, the animals left the Ark.
Yeah. And so what Noah did, as the Bible says, he didn't bring two of every species. He brought two of every kind
of animal. And did he bring the senior citizens, the real big, heavy, old, overweight dinosaurs?
Right. He would not. The ones that played Nintendo.
So we'd be out of luck, right?
He would bring juvenile giraffes and elephants. Of course.
Yeah, healthy, young ones.
You want them to live long after they disembark.
And a lot of them were teenagers. They deserve to be punished
Yeah. Stay in your room for a year. And so not only were there way fewer, but they didn't weigh as much as people would guess. And God says in the Bible, they were the creatures that breathed air through their nostrils. And so insects, they don't
have
nostrils.
Have insects on the ark.
And fish don't breathe air. So there was a minimal number of creatures, but it was a huge task. Mm-hmm. And God is the one who brought the animals to the ark. Noah built the ark with his sons. Our website is Real Science Radio, realscienceradio.com. Go to our website, click on the store, and get the DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner. You'll love it. Dr. Carl Werner on Living Fossils. May God bless you. Science Radio. Turn up the real science radio.
Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about. Now you can subscribe to Bob Enyart's monthly Bible study DVDs. These verse-by-verse Bible study videos are great for family Bible study or even starting your own neighborhood Bible study. Each month, you get 4 or 5 Bible study sessions on 2 DVDs. You can subscribe by calling 1-800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.